Our next case for argument is 22-1093, Promptu Systems versus Comcast Cable. Mr. Schroeder, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The law provides two sentinels to guard against resorting to hindsight when performing an obviousness analysis. First, there's a requirement when at the board that it provides specific reason grounded in the prior art that would motivate a skilled artisan at the time of the invention to make the combination. The second is that the board must consider objective indicators which provide real-world evidence of whether something would have been obvious at the time. And the temptation to resort to hindsight is high here, where we've got an older patent and where modern technology has made this similar technology ubiquitous. The board's opinion here falls short in both respects. First, on the motivation to combine analysis, where the board determined whether Julia would have been combined with either Nazarathy or Quigley, the board expressly rejected the specific reasons identified by Comcast in its petition for making the combination. Yet the board nonetheless found motivation to combine because...
Let me be clear on that. They rejected one of the arguments of Comcast, not all of them. Is the partitioning motivation that they relied on, is that not something that was raised by Comcast?
So, Your Honor, if we turn to the actual petition itself that Comcast prepared, and this is at Appendix 571 to 572. What we've got here is an omnibus motion to combine section. So Comcast petition alleged 17 claims were invalid over a combination of Julia and Nazarathy or Quigley. At the end of all the analysis, there's three paragraphs explaining why one of skill would have been motivated to make this combination. This is on Appendix 571 to 72. The first paragraph simply says these are all in the same field. So, okay, they're analogous art. That's the allegation there. The second paragraph says one of ordinary skill in the art would have naturally considered them. So they would have been aware of them and would know that they could be implemented, that these features could be plugged in.
Right. So this is the paragraph that I want to focus on.
Yes.
I read this paragraph as saying, Julia says we have an idea about creating some arrangement. Obviously, more detail might be needed to figure out how to do little pieces of it, but skilled artisans know. Isn't that a specific motivation to go and look at the other prior art to give the, I'm just going to call them, implementation details within the structure that Julia calls for?
I don't think so for two reasons.
And I thought that the board read it that way, which seems to me pretty reasonable, no?
The board did read it that way, and that was error for it to do so. And before I turn specifically to what Julia teaches, which I think will help shed some light on this.
Just to be clear, I mean, I know I interrupted before you got to the third paragraph. The third paragraph is the one that the board says that wouldn't be enough by itself. But that's why I think all the action is in the second paragraph.
And I think you're right, Your Honor. And what sets this case out, apart from every other case cited in Comcast's brief, is that this third paragraph here, and this is the sole paragraph where Comcast explains the purported benefits that would motivate a skilled artisan to make the combination, everything in the third paragraph is what the board rejected when it said, yeah, well, you haven't tied this together.
Let's get back to the second paragraph.
Yes. So the second question is simply this paragraph that says one would have been aware of the references and would know that they could be combined. Well, a skilled artisan is already presumed to be aware.
No, it says more than that. Julia discloses a system that does certain thing but is not limited to any particular techniques or a particular physical network architecture used to implement. Nazarathy and Quigley both describe particular techniques.
Yes, but we should also be really clear here. So Nazarathy and Quigley are not describing prior art networks. It is not as if Comcast's argument here is, here's what Julia says, here's how the network would have worked, here's how a standard network would have done partitioning. Nazarathy and Quigley both suggest changing the cable network, changing the network in order to address this perceived alleged upstream bandwidth problem. That's what these purported benefits are. That is the motivation that's provided in Comcast's petition in that third paragraph. And so when you look at what Julia teaches, it does not suggest partitioning. It's all it says is multiple users may issue requests simultaneously over the network. That's all it says. It doesn't say anything about how speech is multiplexed on a back channel or demultiplexed on the back end in order to separate out the speech channels. It simply says in column 6, this is at 2600 in the appendix, all it says, and if you look at these sites here, all it says is multiple users may issue requests simultaneously. And then it's describing data source 210, which is a database. It says it's a network accessible information resource, which has already been constructed to support access requests from simultaneous multiple network users, as known. So yes, it was known that you could access a database, but it does not describe or suggest anywhere within Julia this concept of identifying how to solve, or that there even is a problem with the upstream bandwidth and how to solve it through multiplexing or demultiplexing. And if, in fact, if you look at Julia in column 5 and 6 on this same page, it talks about, it does acknowledge that there's benefits to performing speech recognition on a set-top box because of these bandwidth issues. It doesn't propose or suggest modifying the entire network or how speech is transmitted upstream over a network to solve that problem. And that's the motivation. That's the motivation Comcast purported to include here on Appendix 572. Saying Julia would reap the benefits of Nazarathy by increased bandwidth, or Quigley, avoiding collisions. And those are the reasons the board expressly said, you haven't given enough here. You haven't tied this benefit to the combination. We're not going to ignore that.
Before your time runs out, can you address, just recite, what are the issues you have with the board's treatment of the objective indicia?
Yes, Your Honor. So turning to the objective indicia, I'd like to focus our time today on the presumption. So even though Prompt 2 provided unrebutted testimony that Agile TV practiced Claim 1 from their CTO, who was their PhD in electrical engineering.
Yeah, none of that matters because practicing does not get you a presumption. So go on to the next point.
Yes. So he gave...
It has to be what's the phrase...
Coextensive. Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
And so Prompt2's evidence that we did submit did satisfy that coextensiveness requirement. So in Prompt2's patent owner response, we detailed how the Agile TV system embodies the claimed invention.
Again, not enough.
He goes
the point of coextensive, right, for the presumption, is that you have a product that not only embodies it, but kind of doesn't embody anything else.
And that is
so that it's natural to think that if the product is super successful or is praised, there's not much else of significance to the product that could be the subject of all this success or praise except what's in the claim.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So and practicing and embodying just don't do it.
Dr. Chaykin's declaration explains how this architecture was fundamental to the Agile TV system, and that it practiced it. And this evidence was unrebutted. Comcast didn't come forward as was required under WBIP and Polaris. Comcast did not rebut that with anything other than attorney argument. It had no evidence saying, no, your product doesn't embody that. Here's these other unclaimed features. The board discounted Dr. Chaykin's declaration not because it said he didn't do enough. It said he was conclusory, and they treated him as if he was an expert, not a fact witness with foundational knowledge. He has testimony here. He's not a patent attorney. He's a PhD, and he explained how the embodiments of Agile TV that he developed and deployed within Comcast Network do everything that's required by Claim 1, and the board discounted that wholesale. And then the board came up with an additional reason and said, we have, on our own review of the evidence, identified important unclaimed features.
Comcast never of the Agile TV product.
Yes, Comcast never made that argument. That's a violation of the APA, nor does the board ever explain what those important unclaimed features are either. And that's another violation of the APA. And this is in the NuVasive case and Magnum Oil. Cases raised in Prompt2's opening brief on this appeal and wholly ignored by Comcast.
Right, but another way to look at it is to say that the standard for, well, I guess for if you're relying on presumption, we don't have the presumption because you haven't, in fact, your own testimony doesn't even try to show there's nothing else besides the claim features in the Agile TV. We're willing to try to do more for you than you have done by looking to see if maybe we will fill in the gaps for you to see if there really are no other claim features. But we see some, so we're not going to do that.
That was an argument that Comcast never made at the board, and they never rebutted any of the facts that he put forward explaining how this was it. They didn't have anyone from, an expert. They didn't have anyone from Comcast say, no, this didn't do this, actually, when we deployed it. This didn't do this, or here's the reasons why we praised it. Here's the reason why we wanted you to show it to senators. Here's why we showed it at our holiday party in 2003. Here's why Brian Roberts said this is his favorite new piece of technology at a corporate strategy meeting in February 2004. They have no evidence rebutting Dr. Chaykin's sworn testimony here. They even took his deposition and didn't ask him a single question about how Agile TV worked, notwithstanding this detailed declaration that this is exactly what is described in the patent, and then he goes through and explains exactly how it meets the claim, and that this was fundamental to their success and all the evidence that we put in. And so, Your Honor, that is the error that the board made with respect to the objective indicia of non-obviousness. And this is not, these are facts from the time of the invention showing that this claim combination that we've got in claim one of the 196 patent was not obvious. If it was obvious at the time, Comcast, one of the largest cable network operators of all time, wouldn't have come to us and asked us to help them solve this problem and then show them how to do this in their network and go so far as to even license the patent at the time. And then the internal presentation, which is in this, in the record as well, which you got from the litigation, acknowledged that Prompt2 was the only vendor out there who had sought to tackle providing voice recognition over a cable television network, and that there was no other alternative vendors, and that we know more than anyone else at the time about doing it. And these are objective indicia of non-obviousness that the board wholesale ignored because it disregarded his unrebutted declaration and then found reasons to say that the claims were not coextensive for bases that Comcast did not raise. And so this case is just like the Classco case as well, where there's unrebutted evidence of secondary considerations that were just wholesale ignored and where the board erred in discounting them when they're not rebutted. And I see it in my rebuttal time, Your Honor, so unless there's any further questions now, I'll take a break.
Okay. Mr. Perry?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. Back to motivation to combine. The board made the factual finding that a person of skill in the art would have been motivated to make the combination. That finding is entitled to substantial deference on this review. The discussion about what the board accepted and rejected, I think, is an important one because it shows the board functioning as a fact finder. It went through the various arguments that Comcast laid out. It accepted some and it rejected others. The one that accepted was that Julia itself suggests the motivation to combine. This court's case has, of course, recognized that a reference may contain such a suggestion. Comcast laid that out in the petition in the paragraph that Judge Toronto was discussing with my friend. Mr. Schmant elaborated on that in his declaration, which is in the record at 3191-96.
He's your expert.
He's our expert. He explained further Julia, including why the motivation would lie. I'd just like to address one thing that was made in the earlier remarks, which is Julia says in so many words, and this is at Appendix 2600 in Column 6, Lines 12 to 26, that the system can be implemented for multiple users as persons of skill in the art would know. And then Mr. Schmant said what those persons would know is Nazarathy and Quigley's multiplexing system, which allow a network to function for multiple users in the art, and that's the motivation.
Okay, so let me just see if I follow. The motivation to combine Julia with Nazarathy and Quigley all come from that one sentence in Julia, I think, column 6, that says, as known by practitioners of ordinary skill in the art. Is that correct?
There's three sentences in the paragraph, but that is one of the sentences, yes, Your Honor.
Well, how do the other two sentences connect Nazarathy and Quigley? Don't you tell me, what about Julia? The board rejected all of your other stuff. So all you prevailed on for motivation combined was that there's something in Julia that leads people to Nazarathy and Quigley.
Yes, Your Honor.
So please walk me through what in Julia leads someone to Nazarathy and Quigley.
Absolutely, Your Honor. So I'm at appendix 2600, which is Julia, column 6, starting at line 12, as illustrated. This is the key paragraph. And Mr. Schmant explains this better than I can in his declarations in paragraphs 440 to 443, but this is the point. Multiple users may simultaneously access the device. That's the first sentence, right? Access the network. The data source 210, which functions for the speech recognition, being a network accessible information resource, has typically already been constructed to support access requests from simultaneous multiple network users as known by practitioners of ordinary skill in the art. That's the key sentence.
Okay.
Then the third one goes on to talk about...
Okay, so that's the key sentence.
Yeah.
I agree with you. But that is certainly the key sentence. And so it's your argument, and this is not a hostile question, that sentence would lead skilled artisans to look to prior art that does in fact support simultaneous multiple network users in their request. Is that
yes,
correct? Okay. And it's your argument, and I think the board found, that Nazarathy and Quigley are just such things.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So now my question is, where in the petition did you actually argue this?
So it's in page 553 of the appendix. It's the carryover paragraph between 553, or I'm sorry, I misspoke, Turner. 571. Apologize.
Yep.
571 to 572, which then also cites, of course, Mr. Schmant's declaration at 443, which builds it out further. What Julia discloses,
yeah,
known in the art.
Where do you say that Julia says that critical part about how other references can supplement by teaching simultaneous multiple network users and how to handle their requests?
So it's in, actually, Mr. Schmant's declaration. Are we say a person
I know
still...
it's in Schmant's declaration.
Yes,
I don't see it in your petition, and I'm a little concerned by that because I think your petition is a little light on motivation combined. You've got just three paragraphs for a gazillion and a half claims. You apply these to all of them. One paragraph, your further paragraph, has been completely rejected by the board. So the
yes,
only thing left is that Julia says this. There's no doubt Julia says it. There's no doubt that I think the fact that Julia says it is good enough. The problem I have is the board is limited to the arguments you made in the petition. And I'm struggling a little bit to see this particular argument made in the petition.
Yes, Your Honor. The board is limited to the arguments made in the petition as supported by the evidence submitted with the petition. The board has the discretion to look at the expert evidence or not, and here the board told us it decided to look at Mr. Schmant's declaration. It credited it, right? It quoted it in its opinion at appendix 33 to 34, so it looked through the petition, as we pointed to to Schmant declaration paragraph 443.
Mr. Gray, how can you sit here and defend the fact that you told me a minute ago that there's an absolutely critical sentence in Julia that sort of carries all the water for you, and I agree, that is the only sentence that carries water for you. And how can you not cite it or reference it in your petition?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, we cite it.
Where?
Appendix 571 cites Julia at 6:12 to 27, which is what I just read.
Wait. Only in response, you cited only for the proposition. Julia and Nazarathy and Quigley are all in the same field.
They are all in the same field.
Period.
And
that's what you cited.
And we make the citation to that paragraph, which then Mr. Schmant explains.
All in the same field.
Yes,
that's
Your
what
Honor.
You cited for. You don't cite it for provides the motivation to go outside of Julia to find particularly things that fill the gap of simultaneous multiple network users. You just cite it for the fact that they're all in the same field. You now want it to do a lot more.
Your Honor, they're all in the same field, and Mr. Schmant, again, I have to keep coming back to, we had an expert to testify on this point that the board credited, explained that being in the same field...
Can I just call attention to an aspect of this, just help me understand. So, I'm looking at Schmant, and what I'm seeing is that it's not until paragraph 445 of Schmant's that he says, makes this specific point about column 6 of Julia 12 to 26.
Correct.
Not 443,
correct.
Which is not cited in the petition, right? That is, 445 of Schmant's is not cited in the petition. Is that right? Or?
Your Honor, it's not cited on 571. I'm
or
not
572,
sure.
Which are the only two pages you have regarding motivation to combine.
So you
don't rely on it in your petition arguing for motivation to combine.
Well, that's not right, Your Honor. We put in Mr. Schmant's declaration to support the entire petition. I mean, there's a lot in Mr. Schmant. In other words, as you pointed out, there's a lot in this petition, and Mr. Schmant's testimony was supporting all of it. That paragraph that Judge Toronto looked to, 445, wraps up what we have said, and the board, of course...
And yet you didn't cite it or refer to it in your section on motivation combined to support your argument.
No, Your Honor, we did not. And the board did not cite it either. You don't need to read it. The board reached the same conclusion from reading the Julia reference, which clearly is cited, and the part of Mr. Schmant in 443, which we clearly cited, which the board not only cited but quoted and found persuasive and credited, and therefore is entitled to substantial deference from this court.
Do you agree that the board can only decide issues that are argued within the scope of your petition?
At that level of abstraction, of course, Your Honor.
Pardon?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have more that you want to say either on this issue, or do you want to move on to the secondary consideration issue?
I am happy to move to the secondary considerations, Your Honor, and I'll be very brief. On both embodiment and coextensiveness for the presumption, the patent holder relies solely on Mr. Chaykin's declaration, which is at Appendix 5227 to 28, the four paragraphs there, which never discuss the claims other than using the words in them, and it's very carefully worded, Your Honor, to refer to the specification, right? The embodiments described in the 196 patent describe the foundations of the product. The board made a factual finding that there is no evidence of embodiment or coextensiveness, supported by the record, because this is not substantial evidence to support a finding of coextensiveness, this Chaykin declaration. That's the end of presumed nexus, and I think that's the end of the secondary consideration.
Yeah, except that nexus doesn't really apply to copying, right? So what about the copying evidence?
So copying, the board found there was no copying, and Promptu didn't appeal the copying ruling to this court.
I'm confused. There's a lot here in this case, obviously. I thought copying was appealed. Am I completely wrong?
I'm sure my friend will correct me, Your Honor. Of all of the factors that the board went through, long-felt need and commercial success and praised by others and so forth, copying, the board made an express finding, A, that Comcast did not copy the product, and B, that the Promptu had not shown infringement by Comcast product, and Promptu did not appeal that finding to this court.
Okay, is there anything further that you want to address?
Unless the court has further questions?
I do.
I have
a question. I want to let you get through your entire argument before we got to this. Turn to page 8 of your thread brief.
Yes, Your Honor. Oh.
Page 8 of your thread brief, you argue in a very long paragraph at the bottom of the page that you would like us to decide an issue that you are incorporating by reference from another brief that you filed. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you think that's appropriate?
Your Honor, I'm aware the court has looked with disfavor on this practice.
Not looked with disfavor. How many words do you have in this brief?
Close
13,456. What's the word count limit, counsel?
14,000.
14,000. How many words do you think the argument you want to incorporate by reference have us review that's in a completely separate brief that is not consolidated with this one would add? Would it put you over the word count?
Yes, Your Honor.
By a lot.
Yes, Your Honor.
Sure would. By a lot, lot. Not a small amount, lot. So you would like us to decide an issue that you can incorporate by reference by a case that's not consolidated. Are you aware of the fact that FRAC Rule 28 directly addresses when you can do this?
Yes, Your Honor.
And are you aware of the fact that this clearly falls outside of
what
is authorized? Are you also aware, counsel, that we have a prior case called Microsoft versus Data Intern, which expressly and very strongly criticized someone doing this?
I am aware of that.
Are you aware that it was your firm that did it and your firm that was criticized for doing it?
I'm not aware of that, but I will accept the court's representation. Of course.
Seems like a smart move. So now I'd like you to send me a brief that explains why you shouldn't be sanctioned.
Yes, Your Honor.
For violating FRAC Rule 28, violating our court's clear precedent directed at your firm in particular for doing this improper thing in the past. And now you've carried it forward and done it again here.
Yes, Your Honor.
So I want a brief from you. Let's limit it to 10 pages, let's say within 10 days, that explains why your firm shouldn't be sanctioned for having done that. I point out also that in this case, though it wasn't you personally, this board particularly criticized parties in this case for attempting to do exactly that same thing, incorporate by reference these kinds of arguments into briefs, and the board rejected it and said it was improper. Now, I recognize the board could potentially have different rules than ours, but our rules are crystal clear. They're undeniable. What you did is in violation of them, and it's not the first time your firm has done it. It's the second and the first time there was a precedential decision criticizing your firm for doing so and putting them on notice of just how improper it was. So accepting all of that, can you please submit a brief within 10 days?
Of course, Your Honor.
I don't need anything from opposing counsel on this, just from you on why your firm should not be sanctioned for disregarding FRAC Rule 28 and, more importantly, disregarding the court's clear prior decision to your firm that this is improper and should not be done.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
On brief rebuttal, Your Honors, I don't have too many points I'd like to make, but just one in particular. This court's precedent in Personal Web, WBIP, NuVasive and Magnum Oil require the board to identify a particular reason grounded in the prior art that would have motivated a skilled artisan to combine the references in the way suggested. And that paragraph, the board rejected the express reasons provided by Comcast for making the combination, and that should end the inquiry here.
I mean, look, I'll just tell you, there's no doubt to me there's a motivation to combine. Julia says, hey, go look at prior art, there's lots of it out there that shows how to deal with the multiple user request thing, and Nazarathy and Quigley are exactly such prior art. I think that there is for sure substantial evidence. The only question I have is, was that clearly laid out in the petition?
And Your Honor, it was not. The reasons given that Comcast provided in its petition for the motivation had to do with increased bandwidth upstream, or
but
this reducing.
You do realize, based on what I just said and what you probably heard from all of us, that you won't win on this argument if you go remake it, and that this might at best for you be a technicality that their petition didn't flush out the argument. I mean, you hear what we're saying, right? And hopefully your client hears what we're saying, because even if you were to prevail on this technicality, it seems really clear that Julia provides the motivation to combine.
I hear your Honor on that point. I disagree that this would have been a technicality. What this would have enabled us to do is to respond both on the motivation to combine, had they had a thorough analysis of that, and to dispute whether or not the prior art actually taught the partitioning that we had in there.
Okay.
And this is argued in your brief there?
No, this is not. We attacked the sufficiency of Comcast motivation to combine from our first filing, even our preliminary patent owner response, through to our patent owner response. This was an argument we made, is we didn't think they had shown why one would have picked out a Nazarathy and Quigley. They both teach significant revisions to the standard traditional HFC back channel architecture. Nazarathy disclosed moving certain nodes from the head end to intermediary nodes, and Quigley has a different method of avoiding collisions.
Yeah, but that's not a response at all to the point I made about Julia providing a motivation to go look at other prior art that does this. Your argument is this other prior art has very different and unique ways of doing it, and so maybe somebody wouldn't have gone to them in particular. I'm telling you that argument carries no water. And as far as whether you were on notice, I mean, they did, in a different portion of the expert report, squarely present this and quote that language. Granted, they didn't cite it in their petition, but you were on notice. It was there.
I understand that, Your Honor.
And are you telling me you didn't respond to that? Are you saying, just, I want to be clear, because I haven't scoured, but I'm going to. Are you telling me that the patent owner's response doesn't address that language anywhere in it?
We addressed what was presented in the petition. The petition was already as...
Did you address that language from Julia in your patent owner's response? You can say, I don't know. It's okay.
The answer is I don't know, but I don't believe so, Your Honor. And it would be in our...
You believe you did?
I believe we did not address that. I believe we addressed the arguments made, and we attacked the actual specific motivation to combine, which we understood to be in that third paragraph. And the board's initial institution decision credited that. Credited those motivations for the combination, and then the final written decision discredited that.
Now, on appeal, they've clearly argued this sentence from Julia. On appeal, you responded to it. You didn't make the argument that this is outside the scope of the petition. Should I deem that waived?
No, we focused on the specific motivation to combine, which was what was presented in their third paragraph. The first one said they're same field, analogous art. The second paragraph, we contend, goes to combinability, whether these could have been combined. That's what that second paragraph was.
But they point to the sentence that I think carries all the water for them, on appeal. You responded to it. You didn't suggest that that sentence was off limits because they didn't identify it in the petition. So doesn't that mean I may have made an argument, but it's a very circular one because at the end of the day, you end up losing. But
I don't think that that's correct in the standpoint of, because this is an appeal from the board in an administrative agency, and under the APA, this court cannot affirm on a basis that the Patent Office did not provide it, that the petitioner did not raise. This was not the specific...
The Patent Office provided this basis.
And that was one of the bases...
So this is not a standard problem.
No, but this is one of the bases of our APA challenge that we did raise in our brief, was that they can't rely on a ground that wasn't presented by Comcast in its petition.
You didn't put this in that argument. Yes, you made a general APA challenge, but you didn't say this sentence is a problem. Anyway, okay, it's all right. You can see what I'm struggling with. Thank both counsel. The case is taken under submission.